Hello, welcome to Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor Joe Sparrow, and in this episode we're joined by everyone's favourite music biz analysis guru, that's our very own head of insight, Stuart Dredge, who joins me to discuss in depth how AI is most likely going to be used in future music creation and what impact it will have on artists and songwriters. Spoiler alert! It's probably going to empower humans to create more wonderful music, but there are significant wrinkles to be ironed out first. Now, each Music Ally Focus episode, like this one, analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time, like this one. And so this podcast is going to be quick. It'll take about the same amount of time as the Penta X robot could skip over a rope 5,100 times. The admittedly cute Penta X bot skipped over a rope swung by two puny humans 170 times in 1 minute in 2022. Now, talking of our robot overlords, AI music is absolutely the music industry's tech topic of the year so far, and is a technology moving so quickly it has required several reappraisals and check-ins over the last 10 months. This is our latest one, and Stu, who has written literally hundreds of articles on AI music, is ideally placed to bring us up to speed with some incisive insight. So Stu, talking to me, breaks down the ambitions and possibilities, as well as the ethical and legal issues that AI music is bringing to the music business, with three main concepts to consider. The first one being that AI music might actually be human music, for good and for bad, that there is a battle for control and some tensions at the heart of AI music and how it connects technology to the people who are, for example, holding the rights in the music industry. And the third one is that AI music is a lot more than simply pushing a button and expecting music to come out. It's a really fascinating conversation, and we really dig deep into some really interesting topics. So let's go over to that right now. Okay, now it's always a pleasure to invite onto the podcast my friend and colleague and head of insight, Stuart Dredge. Hi, Stu.
Hello. Hello.
Now, Stu, these are always typically insightful podcasts, which is appropriate given your job title. So what we're going to do is go over the inescapable topic of the year, which is AI in relationship to music, and we're going to chat around three of the main sort of talking points around AI and music, and how it relates to people making music, control within the music industry, and what it's going to mean for sort of future music making and creativity. You have reported on this a lot. We talked about this recently. How many news stories do you think you've written about AI and music recently?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's like 40 pages of stories on our website. but that's, I would say, about a good half of them have come this year alone. So we started writing about it way back, maybe nearly 10 years ago.
Yeah. And so, but like you say, about half. So when Stu mentions one page of news stories, each page is an archive with maybe 20 stories on it. So we can sort of guess that in this last year, you've written hundreds of news stories about AI and how it relates to music. And one of the things that's happened over that time of you writing about them, of course, is that the sort of the understanding of what AI music and AI music making is, that has changed from, let's say, bemusement a while ago to fear, like AI is going to take our jobs, to, well, what does it mean to have AI music in a legal sense, and how does that relate to people? And that's what we're going to talk about here. So AI music is human music, we're sort of figuring out now, for better or for worse. So where are we at in that? The technology is not bad. The technology is what we humans put into it. So where are we at with that idea of AI music being human music?
Yeah, well, I think, and also to start with something you said, I think everyone is on their own curve with this. So like the kind of the stages of grief, there's a stages of kind of reactions to AI, which is sort of disbelief that it can be done, distrust that it's any good, fear about what it means if it is good, excitement about what can be done. I think everyone's on a different curve. Some people went through this years ago and are already at the stage of, right, we're excited about it now. Other people are coming into it now, terrified. So I think everyone is on that different curve. But yeah, one thing I've been thinking about a lot is this idea of like AI music. Ironically enough, we talk about it like it's sentient already. Like AI is doing this and AI is doing that. But this stuff isn't sentient. It's always humans. Like, humans are building these models. Humans are deciding what to train them on. And humans are using them to create stuff. And so kind of this year, one of the big stories this year was The Weeknd and Drake, the kind of deepfake track that came out, Heart on My Sleeve. And that wasn't an AI going rogue and clone The Weeknd. It was a human making a decision that was kind of unartist friendly to clone their voices. So a lot of the stories around negative stuff, it's human decisions, humans saying, I've got access to this AI, I'm going to do this with it, and it's not very nice. And the same when we talk about AI is being trained on human music without permission. You know, someone is deciding what to feed into the model. And if they're doing that without seeking the permission of labels and artists, then that's a bad human decision. So a lot of the stuff around this, it's humans being human. It's not AI is doing anything weird and disruptive. It's humans. But on the flip side of that is that humans can be creative and wonderful and brilliant. And we're starting to talk more alongside the bad stuff about the good stuff, that when you have creative humans building these things, training them ethically and making music using them, there's going to be loads of exciting stuff. So I think that's the thing, is if we think about AI music as human music, if we think about AI businesses as human businesses, it kind of gives us maybe a slightly less knee-jerk response to the challenges, and maybe a good kind of stance to kind of start talking about what we can do with it, the positive stuff.
I mean, we'll talk in a minute about the sort of the legal side and the control and what that all means, but the fake Drake example did feel like a line in the sand in some respects, didn't it? Because on one hand, it was a great example of human creativity. I mean, it wasn't the best song in the world, but it was a tangibly fine song that people engaged with, and you know, it used voices that people recognized and enjoyed and brought all that together. And it was all ethically dubious, right? But at the same time, it's an example of human ingenuity. There was a recent case of a visual artist in Denmark. It was paid quite a lot of money, 100,000 euros or something, by a gallery to produce some work about money and value. And the artist presented the gallery with four blank canvases and a note saying, I've kept the money, and they're now suing him. Now, it's kind of hard to argue with that as an artistic statement, although I think legally the artist did not deliver what was requested in exchange for the money, because he was asked for something else, not blank canvases. But I mean, there's something there, isn't there, about ingenuity? So while you know, the fake Drake song was quickly pulled down for, you know, I'm waving my hands a bit here, reasons. There was sort of something there, wasn't there? And it's an indicator of what's to come.
I think it's the thing. So that there's several points in that. I mean, one point is legally it's still being discussed. How is something like that infringing at the moment? Because we don't have personality rights in many countries where you can say, this is my voice and it's protected, take it down. So if it's an original song, and it's using a voice kind of artist, it's hazy. But like you say, there's legally and there's ethically. Like ethically, it's just a shit thing to do, to clone an artist's voice without permission and make a song and then release it commercially without ever asking him permission. I mean, and if your goal is to kind of work with artists, which this guy Ghostwriter, I think that's his plan, he wants artists to work with him and do stuff, then that's a really, it just sticks in the craw a bit, that way of going about it, about releasing something without their permission. I'm not sure it's a good starting point, but you're right. This stuff around voice prints, voice clones, deepfakes, we've seen Grimes take the initiative and do it herself and make a lot of money. We've seen Holly Herndon do that. We've seen startups emerge, quite a few of them which come from, actually been founded by artists. They're saying, we want to help artists take control and train an AI on their voice and then make it available for licensing and have a degree of control over what gets put out. So I think, again, it's like a lot of this stuff, everyone gets panicked about the deepfakes and being a terrible thing, but there is a licensed model here that can be explored and could be really kind of not just new revenues for those artists, but it could actually create some great music. And like you say, you know, if I had an AI voice print of, I don't know, I'm trying to think who's good. If I had Taylor Swift's voice print, I wouldn't make anything because I can't write songs and I can't play music. So I wouldn't do anything good with it, but someone who was a skilled musician and producer could. So in a sense, I think this all is going to still come down to creative humans doing stuff. But I think it does need to be, it needs to be licensed, but most importantly, permission. Like I just don't think it's really, it's a really terrible start to any kind of business if you're just using artists' identities without asking them.
So what the counter argument to that, of course, is, well, is it? Because if you look back to I'm not saying I agree with this, but I'm saying when you look historically for comparison points, you know, you look at the 1980s when samplers suddenly became accessible, and we had this glut of really good music that when copyright infringement was not really, the laws around copyright infringement were a little bit fuzzy when it came to grabbing a drum beat from this song and a snippet of melody from this one and assembling something new. So we got all these great albums, you know, De La Soul, the Beastie Boys album for around that time, Jungle Brothers, just all these classic hip-hop albums, piecing them together from other bits of songs. And then we've seen, of course, with the problems for releasing that first De La Soul album, and it's only just gone on streaming for this reason, because of getting all these rights. So there was a sort of a grey area period which actually fostered an unleashed creativity, and all these great things happened, and then everything recalibrated. So I'm not saying that's right, and of course the music industry then retrospectively went and solved all those problems with laws, but there's also... I agree with what you're saying, that it's sort of morally dubious. But then at the same time, if someone released tomorrow a track featuring the voice of John Lennon, and it was really, really good, and it was as good as Imagine, right? And it's had the same production, thank you, courtesy of AI, the songwriting courtesy of AI, because it had been trained on a corpus of his work, and his voice sounding perfect. That's morally dubious. No one has been asked for permission. We've got a really big problem there, haven't we? Because imagine another Imagine, right? And the world would fall over themselves for it, potentially.
Imagine all the Imagines. Yes. So in one sense, I think, I don't know, I think it's, so the thing with sampling, I think, is the impersonation aspect. The fact that you could put it out and people would think it was John Lennon, right, would think it's because of that side. If there's no clear thing saying this is not by John Lennon, this is by an AI experiment. So that's part of it, is being transparent about it rather than. But I think at its core, though, if your goal is artists, I'd like to be your trusted partner here on using this technology, and to demonstrate my suitability for that, I've made this song with no permission from these artists and released it. Like, I just think if you really want to work with artists, I think you need to do things the right way from the start. And that's why we're starting to see it now. We're starting to see business owners saying, we're going to do this properly. So, I think, but again, it's legally hazy. You know, is it copyright infringement? No one seems to be quite sure enough. And obviously lawyers always say, well, you need a good lawyer for that. But on your point, actually, I was at a conference last week run by the Ivers Academy in London, all about AI. And there was a chap there from the Human Artistry Campaign, who were one of the people in the music industry who have been setting out the principles they want to regulate this stuff with. And he was talking, and he sort of got onto this a bit of Johnny Cash, and the Johnny Cash singing the Barbie song, which you may have heard, it's on YouTube. And he sort of said, he was really cross about it. He said, this is a grotesque for the artist's legacy. And I will be honest with you, all the British, because he was from America, and he's like very, very committed to lobbying regulators and telling them this stuff is terrible. Yeah. And all the British people around me were stifling grins. And in lunchtime, they were saying, have you heard it? It's brilliant. And none of us felt that was harmful to Johnny Cash's legacy. We felt like it was, we knew it wasn't real, and it was funny, and we didn't feel it was harmful. But as someone was saying to me, what if someone did the same with Dolly Parton singing a racist anthem? I think we'd all be outraged, because we like Dolly Parton. And so I think there's a really interesting human nuance in what we think of as ethical and unethical, but the principles underlying it all the same are, do you need permission? Can they take it down?
Well, I mean, there's precedent here with parody, isn't there? You're allowed to create parody. You know, Weird Al Yankovic has not destroyed the careers of the people he is sort of made jokey versions of songs of. You know, they, if anything, he has enhanced their careers, and we all know what's going on.
You did
on
always know it was Weird Al Yankovic. That's the thing. You know, there was no kind of...
Yes.
You didn't slip things out and say, this is the really by Michael Jackson. It's just called Fat rather than Bad. And no one... Yeah. So I think it's all being hashed out, but I feel like it's like in any technology music interaction. is there are good people and there are bad people, or good actors and bad actors, really. And I think some of this conversation on defects, we're going to see people come out who are simply looking for their own profit. And this is maybe, there have been some startups we talked about who were like, we're going to provide a home for deep fake music because it should be online. And they got shut down very quickly.
Yeah, good luck with that, right?
But there are other people who are coming out saying, we want to figure out how artists can take control of this and use it and do it well and creative stuff can happen. And those are the people I think it's going to be exciting to work with, the ones who are like, we think this can serve artists and we're going to help them, rather than I've done a song and I'm going to make money from it and maybe you can work with me because I'm great.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I wonder if there is, we're in an era that has been driven from the blitzscaling technological giants who are saying move fast and break things, right? And then that technology has been very eagerly embraced by the music industry to make loads of money. And it is now, but then that kind of the gatekeeping aspect of that has gone, because anybody with a reasonable laptop and a decent processor, a GPU, can download the software to and train their own AI, on a corpus of vocals or whatever, and create their own at home. It's not in the cloud. It's on their own machine, their own Johnny Cash voice, and do whatever they want with it. And that feels liberating and exciting from an artist perspective, and from a technological perspective, it's what our tech overlords tell us to do, right? So I can understand from an artist perspective saying, well, I'm not going to wait for permission. I'm going to train my own machine learning thing on someone's voice. I'm going to create a really, really good song of them. And then I'm going to approach their team and say, hey, look, I've made this song with your artist's voice. Why don't you license it from me and we'll all make money?
Someone was saying the other day that there's one use case for this is if you're a songwriter pitching your work to artists, you could pitch the song with their clone singing it so they can hear how it might sound if they were singing it. And that was one thing that the Ivers Academy, and the Ivers Academy summit was for songwriters. And people there were going, oh, that's a problem I have, that I'm not a great singer. Yeah. And I'm pitching these songs to people with me singing them. So there's all kinds of, like, the more you think about these things, the more the use cases emerge. And that's where you go, right, this is good. How can we do this in the right way? And I think that's the thing. It's what's legal and what's the right way of doing things. And they're not always the same, but I think it's always good to look for the people who are doing it the right way, even if that can be harder.
Now, at this point, let me just take a moment to remind you that last year, Music Ally launched a series of 5 free courses covering everything you need to know about Amazon Music for Artists, including programming and curation, selling artist merchandise, understanding voice technology, reaching audiences via Alexa, and live streaming on Twitch. Supported by Amazon Music, these courses are all completely free to access. And now, thanks to Amazon's support, Music Ally is also able to offer complimentary certification to any individual or company that completes all 5 of the courses. So what have you got to lose? Nothing, that's what, because they're all free. So you can find a link to the Amazon Music for Artists series in our show notes beneath the podcast. And of course, we're talking about the value of voices, and really it's where it bleeds over into brands and brand recognition around a certain artist and their image and all those things, because there's been examples of times when the voice doesn't matter. No one cares that, I think on Toxic, Britney Spears' song, the voice in the chorus is quite clearly Kathy Dennis's, who sung the guide vocals, and they just left them in because they sounded really
good.
And it sounds, I believe so. I may be spreading complete untruths.
Britney Spears has good lawyers, is that true?
That's, if Britney Spears lawyers are listening, let's have a chat. Let's talk about something else. But there are examples of guide vocals being used, and who cares if it's Kathy Dennis's vocal blended with Britney Spears's vocals and it's a bit of this and a bit of that. I don't think anyone cares. What everyone cared about was it was an amazing song written by really talented people, performed by a really talented person who was iconic. And that's the bigger picture, right? And that's where we move on to point number 2 in this discussion, which is about, which you've touched on already, which is control and how this technology is loosening control. Now, we know that the music industry is an industry of control. It is about controlling and managing catalogs and IP and all those kind of things. And for 100 years, it's all been very, very simple, which is you have a composition and you have a recording of that composition. And those both of those things are used in various ways. And we use laws that have been around for hundreds of years to manage the income flow from that and control over who gets to use it and who doesn't. But if that's not the case anymore, clearly we've just named loads of examples of how that doesn't work. So
I like how it was simple there, because have you seen that diagram? I think CMU in their digital law thing, it's like the diagram of how music industry works,
yeah,
and publishing,
yeah,
and it's like a spaghetti junction Venn diagram. But yes,
well, yeah. I like to boil things down, you know, and say it's simple, isn't it? You've got two sides of the industry, blah blah blah, we're done, let's go for lunch. But I mean, like, it's, but then if okay, so if the current industry is complicated enough and now we've got all these little, you know, these new technologies poking holes in it, there's a lot of tension around how creative AI in a music sense should be regulated, or who controls it, or like where. So first of all, where are we at with that?
Yeah.
What are the main points of view?
Well, I think the music industry has learned from its past battles that it needs to get together, get as unified as possible, and get its lobbying points in order to kind of slam regulators and politicians and say, this is what we want. Like, it's been the quickest I think I've seen. If you think about all the past, they've had battles over copyright and the value gap and YouTube and Europe and all these things, and piracy back in the day. So I think this year we've seen the music industry come together very quickly to set out its principles for how it wants this creative AI to be regulated. And it kind of boils down to three basic things, which are kind of permission and payment and transparency. So the industry wants developers to have to license music and ask permission if they're training an AI model on it. It wants them to pay royalties for that. It's got to be a commercial licensing relationship. And they want transparency around what these things are being trained on and what the output is. So they want to understand what's being used. And those three things, there have been about, I don't know, 760 different announcements by different industry bodies and groups saying these are the principles for which AI is regulated. But they all boil down to the same things. Like, the industry has actually come together and said, this is what we want. And this is all being led by the kind of the biggest companies and the biggest industry bodies in their industry, which makes sense, because they have the clout and they know how lobbying works. They know how politicians like to be spoken to. They know how to get things done or try and get things done. So there's a sense there of, like, we need the heavyweights, we need the Universal Music Groups, we need the RIAs, we need the IFPIs all together, because they've got the power to kind of set out how we think this should be shaped, and then politicians will listen, hopefully. And this is often like a narrative is like music against AI. I mean, it's not all combative. You know, a lot of these things begin with, we agree AI has many good uses and want to work with good companies in that space, and we don't hate it. But it's shaped as like music and AI. But one thing that's been coming through in recent weeks is that within the music industry, there are some tensions, and they're kind of a hangover from the streaming economy debates that we've written and talked about so much before. So in the last weeks, we've started to hear managers and musicians talk about the idea of exerting their rights with their right titles. So saying, you're my label, but you can't license my work to train an AI without asking me first. So whereas the labels are saying AI companies need permission from us to train on music, musicians are starting to say, actually, label, you need to ask my permission before you can license those companies as well. It's like a double layer of kind of permissions. And there's kind of almost, it's almost a bit of a trust gap between the music industry and the AI sector. So music companies saying, we don't trust these AI companies not to be training their models on commercial music. We think they're doing it already, and we're going to get them if they do, and we're going to make them license it. But within,
I mean, they definitely are, aren't they? Why would they not? You know,
every time there's a new one now, they stress how they've trained it on production music or their own library.
That's the one they release to the public, though, isn't it? And the really good one is the one they're keeping internally that's trained on the Beatles.
That's just trained on Beyonce. Essentially, there's a trust gap, and it's like a double-pronged trust gap, if gaps can be pronged. I'm not sure they can. where the music industry doesn't trust the AI industry. So you hear mutterings about, I'm sure they're all training their AIs on our commercial music, even though the AI companies say, no, we're not. We're training it on production music, or we're training it on our own internal libraries, or we're getting our house band to play stems. But the music industry, there's a fundamental trouble. There's a lack of trust that the AI industry will do things properly. And that's where all these regulatory lobbying comes from. But within the music industry, there's also a trust gap, generally speaking, between a lot of musicians and songwriters and rights holders, where they say, well, in streaming, we felt hard done by, and there's been years of debate about that. And we're not sure that if you, as labels, publishers doing deals with AI companies, we worry that you won't have our best interests at heart. So, and what you're seeing at the moment is you're seeing moves for artists and for managers to kind of exert their rights. So I think last week I was at this conference and the Council of Music Makers, which is the UK's umbrella body for all the songwriter and musician bodies, producers, they put a letter out that as a music artist, you can sign the letter and send it to your label, essentially saying, if you want to do anything with my music with an AI company, you need to ask me first. So we're kind of seeing that, those double-layer tensions. So where the industry is saying, we need to come together and we need to lobby politicians to regulate the AI people so they deal with music properly. And then within music, you're hearing artists and songwriters saying, we want to make sure that rights holders deal with us properly as well. And the interesting thing here is, and this was something that was a talking point at the conference last week, was that there's a worry that if we're divided in the industry, our ability to lobby is weak because we're going to politicians and saying, actually, we're still all fighting about this, but can you do stuff for us? And so that's not the way to get politicians to do what you want. You have to get yourself unified and then tell them what you want. But equally, if you hear industry bodies or big companies telling artists and artists, shut up about this stuff, we need to be unified, that's always a bit of a red flag of like, no, we want to sort this out. We're not going to wait till later. So I think it's one of those things where the industry needs to unite around what it wants to see happen, but it also needs to kind of work out these internal tensions and questions to make sure that everyone feels like they'll be dealt with fairly when the licensing deals come, which the industry is pushing for, I suppose.
You mentioned trust there, and I think that's really is the key issue here, isn't it? From all perspectives, people trusting other people to do the right thing because at the moment it's a bit of a wild west. But also, there's a lot of unspoken fear here, isn't there? You've said correctly that it's been remarkable to see all these various bodies unite, pull together, and pull in the same direction very, very quickly. The labels, for instance, are clearly very scared of the impact that music generating AI might have, aren't they? Because they're suddenly seeing, I imagine, they're looking at the scale of progress. They're fast forwarding 5 years and saying, we might have lost our grip on the industry here, and something else comes in and disrupts us, right?
Maybe. I mean, I'm not sure it's blind fear. I think it's more this acknowledgement that AI is just a neutral tool and it's going to be shaped. And so we need to be in there shaping it as an industry. So I think it's less fear and kind of pragmatism saying this is going to be really important. It's not something you can just turn off or stop. And maybe in the past, like maybe there are people who remember the lessons of the early kind of Napster days when it was like, turn the internet off. It's terrible for music.
Yeah.
As it turns out, it's been great for music in lots of ways, and it's been challenging in other ways, and it all depends on what those humans did with it. But I think there's definitely a sense of this could be used for bad things, and we want to stop that happening, and we want to really focus on the good stuff and how we can use it. And that's why I think, as well as all the kind of shouting and the lobbying, you're also seeing labels start to invest in AI companies, start to strike deals with them, like Universal and Endel, for example. Like they're going to start doing all the positive stuff, working with companies that they don't see as problematic or don't see as challenging. So that's all happening at the same time. So even as they're calling for regulation on the bad stuff, they are starting to find those partnerships with the good stuff that is more of the kind of tools that can help and enable musicians and rights holders and creativity. So it's kind of it's like a two thing. It's almost like in a way, in the heyday of YouTube argument, when the industry was saying YouTube doesn't pay us enough as a value gap, it's terrible, but also was using YouTube really energetically for marketing. It's going to be the same with AI, I think. Like AI isn't one service, so it's not quite the same. But there's a lot of talking going on with the people who we see as good actors, and then there's also this regulatory side, which is going to be like, these bad things could happen, stamp down on it before it does. So it's not fair. I think it's fear and excitement in a way. There's excitement about the positive stuff. And I think it gets underwritten about sometimes, but there is genuine excitement. And there are so many, like today, for example, I was writing about an AI startup, which by the time this goes out, will be kind of, you know, weeks ago. But it's a startup that's done it, or an app that's added a thing where if you're a composer playing the piano, there's a tool using AI that kind of transcribes your piano playing into sheet music as you play it, and you can share with other people and edit it. Like, that's an example of a tool that kind of aids your composition, doesn't replace you. And every day there's something like that coming out as well. So there's going to be so much that's genuinely positive tools. So I think the industry is excited as well as fearful. It's not just one or the other, if that makes sense.
Yes, I don't think it is as cynical as you say, of saying, well, they're just scared and they're trying to get on top of it. But I think there is fear in there. And part, here's an example of how I would say that probably people are thinking, and I think, in my opinion, this is probably relatively close to the truth, which is, okay, we all know that releasing some sort of music or some sort of creative AI music model / platform that is trained on artists' work without permission, like artists you and I know without permission, is wrong. And it will rightly be stamped down because that's not fair. So they're releasing, and they're being very, very careful to say it's ethical. We're doing this based on really high quality catalog music that we happen to own that's been created especially for this or whatever. Fine. But behind the scenes, there are people, let's face it, taking the Beatles catalog and training their AI and machine learning on it, right? Now, you can't release a model or a platform that is trained on that unless you want the Beatles lawyers to shut you down really, really quickly. But here's the sort of secondary or tertiary sort of step of that is saying, okay, let's train a model on the Beatles catalog. Then let's make a bunch of songs using that AI illicitly. And then we've got a bunch of songs that are one step removed from the Beatles catalog, right? And then let's train an AI on those songs and release that model and say, oh, we created these songs. And like there's a sort of plausible deniability in that, and there's a step removed. I'm not saying that AI is good enough to actually do that and for the music that comes out of that process to survive those two degrees of separation. But we're not far away from that, are we? And we could say, oh, well, you know, because how often do we hear songs in real life? You say, that's kind of Beatles-y, that song, but it's not a rip-off. There's no melodies being ripped off.
Isn't this, in a way, that would mimic human creativity in that there are bands now copying Oasis who copied the Beatles? So maybe an AI trained on, so this is happening. In a way, it's one that the whole idea of trading now and other things, the risk is it's like taping an album on cassette on a sixth generation copy. So when I was young, and this is where we age ourselves, when I was young, in my class, someone would buy Usual Illusion 1 and 2 and then would tape it for someone else who would tape it for 4 other people and so on. And if you were at the end of that cool chain, yours sounded terrible. So maybe that's how AI will go. But I don't know. I think this is one of the reasons the industry is pushing for transparency, so that if a company emerges and says, we've got a brilliant AI, the music industry will say, what was it trained on? And it wants there to be some kind of regulation that they should tell us. And it remains to be seen if that can be done and is done. But that's why transparency should be part of this. Like, so if you did train your thing illicitly, how do we find out? And I've heard people tell me two opposite things. Some people have told me, it's really easy to take an output of a musical AI and get back to what it was trained on. And other people have told me it's impossible. And I'm not sure who to believe.
It's impossible, yeah. No, I've heard both as well. That sort of moves us on to our third point, really, which is talking about the nature of creativity and a potential point in the very near future where the creative act becomes being pretty good at typing in a prompt to a musical AI and then assembling sort of the bits of music that come out as a sort of collage and then piecing it together in GarageBand, and hey ho, you've got a good song that you've created by typing in some prompts and using your good judgment to assemble them together. We're back into the sort of realm of sampling again, except these samples don't require any licenses. Which is, I mean, there's a whole different conversation there, which we'll have another time, about the nature of creativity. You know, anyone can be creative, but you have to spend 10,000 hours learning how to play the guitar or whatever. But what's happening here then? What's happening with these sort of text prompt AIs to create music, and what is the what does that mean for the creative process?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people still see AI music as profoundly uncreative. Like, you hit a button, a song comes out, it's probably rubbish, and that's the process. And that was the process for quite a lot of historical AI music things. You would say, give me a track from one of these predetermined genres this long, and it would put something out. The direction of travel now is that the new musical AIs, they are about text prompts. So describe what you want the AI to make for you in words. And that can be genres, it can be instruments, it can be certain BPMs, it can be production styles, it can be moods. You could describe what it's for. Like, it's very, very wide. It's like interacting with ChatGPT or some of these image ones. You know, you can really type in quite long, detailed queries about what you want to get out. And then what happens is it puts something out, and it's not quite right. So you tweak your prompt and try again. And it's like a conversation in a way, or a two-way interaction. And this is this phrase, prompt engineering, which is being bandied about a lot at the moment. And the thing I found, and this is not just from music AIs, but also from using ChatGPT and using the image ones, is it is creative. Like, it's a creative process. And, and if you've got a creative mind, and I kind of would put myself at the lower end of that, but if you're a musician, if you're a producer, you're going to be good at this. If you're excited about it, you know, if you hate the idea and don't do it, you know, you don't have to. But I think musicians are going to be really good at this. And musicians are going to be, and producers are some of the best people at getting good stuff out of musical AIs, because they have those brains to describe music. And so I think there was a really good video recently by this YouTuber who's called, I think it's Tash Teaches.
Oh, yeah, I saw this, yeah.
Yeah, he starts with MusicFi at the end, and he creates a disco sample. And then he takes
I'll
it out.
I'll link to this,
Yeah, and he isolates the drums, because they're the good bit, and he puts it into about 700 other apps and to make a song. And it shows you the process. It's not about using an AI. It's a process of actually building a song, building a track.
It's really fascinating. I will link to it below the podcast, because this is a really good example of how this will work, because it really is showing someone who understands music doing kind of what Max Martin does, where, you know, Max Martin famously, when he's writing another one of his zillion selling hits, he brings in a team of people and says, hey, I need a top line for the chorus. Can you just sing me 10 different top lines you've got on your phone, and I'll pick one of them and use it, and you'll get a credit, and we'll all make loads of money, right? So it's kind of that. It's about that understanding what you're looking for. You don't know what it is, but you know what it is, and you know it when you hear it. And it's a great video, because you're seeing someone do exactly that, which is describe things to a prompt, get stuff out of it, use actual skills to make it sound just right, assemble it using human skills, and then out pops a song, which, you know, it sounds a bit like a, you know, something that could have perhaps been rejected from the last Daft Punk album. You know, like, it's that kind of sort of disco-y kind of, like, it's good, but it's not, you know, it's like, it's plausible, you know? So I'll link to that, because but then, you know, we're back in that sort of area of sampling again. And instead of digging through, you know, crate digging and listening to songs and off YouTube and sampling bits, there's no licensing step involved, is there? There's another conversation to be had here about what, when we get that first song, which is assembled by a human, but created purely of samples from stuff created by a text-led music AI, there's going to be eyebrows raised about that, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's where I think these things are tools. And like you say, so there will be some things where, for example, if you're an influencer, if you're a YouTuber or an Instagrammer or TikToker, you're like, at some point you'll be able to go somewhere, whether it's on that app or elsewhere, and say, I want a song for my new video, and I want it to be bubbly, 100 BPM, pop with a twist of blah. And it will pop out a song, and you choose the one you like and you use it as a background in your video. And that's a use case. But there are going to be musicians doing really weird stuff, like not that different from noodling on a synth to create some crazy sound, or playing with a guitar to find a chord progression that's wonderful. And then the trick then is turning that into a song, and that's a musician's talent. And at the moment, what we're seeing is really even the best musical AIs, they can do up to a minute mill, maybe half a minute of stuff, but they're not really writing good 4-minute songs. So one of their strengths is samples and loops and beats. And then you can
it really feels to me as a very, very limited music making Dabbler, that this is sort of the emergent area in terms of how it will really be used. Of a bit like, you know, when, for example, talking about sampling again, sampling became prohibitively expensive in the early to mid 90s, and so hip hop artists like Dr. Dre instead would, where possible, bring musicians in to create parts that previously would have been a sample. Not recreating them, but getting in the studio and saying, I want something like this, can you do it? And they'll spit out little different riffs or bass lines or whatever, and then he'd grab the one he wanted. It really feels like that, doesn't it? Now, I was playing around this week with the Google LM music making app, which is exactly like this, which you can get access to. You have to apply, but you get access to quite quickly. And you type in a description and it spits out 2 20-second tracks and you pick the best one. And I just want to play you a couple of examples here in terms as a sort of like suggestion of like the plausibility of this. This first one is something pretty simple, which was, I asked for a mid-1960s style American R&B track with horns. And it sounds like this. It's important to note that it doesn't spit out a very high fidelity version. It spits out something very, very lo-fi. But to me, that sounds plausible. And I was kind of impressed by how sort of seamless it was and how fast that they came out. And then you can start, once you understand that what you get out is not shonky and it kind of sounds plausible, you can get creative. So I tested it. I said I wanted a German Schlager song. For those of you who are not fans of Schlager, that's the kind of traditional sort of German pop music, which is very rousing and tub thumping, performed in a an early 2000s bro step dubstep style. So, and that also sounded kind of plausible. It even has a drop in that 20-second sample.
I mean, moving on from that, like when I interviewed Stable Audio recently, or Stability AI, who just launched Stable Audio, which is another one of these systems, one of the things that it's Ed Newton Rex, who is one of the kind of the oldest people involved in, or one of the longest.
Oh, he launched Juke Deck.
Oldest, but he's veterans of this area. Yes. And he was talking about this, someone had done a thing that was hammering wood at 120 BPM. And it had created a sample, and it was created, and so it wasn't a song; it was a sound. One that's definitely easier than getting a really rhythmic lumberjack to come into the studio, if that's what you're saying. But two, like, it's a creative mind that comes up with asking an AI to do that, and then it's a creative mind that has to turn that into a song in some other way. So again, it goes back to our first point, neatly, really, which is that. It's all about humans. Like, the great stuff that's done with this will be because of human creativity and ingenuity. And that creativity is both in the building of these systems to help people do it and in the what you do with it as a user, as a musician. So I think I'm like all the stuff, all the bad news stuff. I think getting the right regulations is important. And I think finding the good people to work with and telling the bad people to do one is important. But I think there is, for a musician, a musician who wants to work with this stuff, I think there's so much to be excited about as a tool. And it's such a hoary old cliche to say samplers and drum machines, but it is really, that's what the stuff I'm interested in. But equally, I think as a musician, if you're a musician who writes acoustic songs on a guitar and you're sitting there feeling threatened, well, no, because it's not very good at that. It can't write a good acoustic guitar singer-songwriter song that with lyrics that strike people. So you've got your own defensible position, which is that you're human and you can connect with humans with your songs. So again, I think the number of musicians who should feel threatened, I think, is a lot lower. Like, if you make a lot of your money from production music, there's a lot of worry in that area, I think, saying, well, what if TV companies can just ask an AI to write their car chase music? Don't you mean? But again, if you're really good at that, you'll have work. But I think so many uses... Either the AI can't do what you do, like they can't do jazz. They can't. They really struggle with jazz. Like, that's one of the famous blank spots of all the musical AIs, is they just can't do jazz. So if you're one
is
of
that
the,
is that because the AI is so wise it's realized it's just not very good and worth doing? Is that what you're trying to say?
Maybe it's like you'll never win the Mercury Prize with a jazz album, so why bother? And now they've realized. But I think I think if you're leaning into this musician, there's so much exciting stuff to do. If you don't want to have anything to do with a musician and just focus on writing your music that connects with people, and that's your thing. And I think it's ultimately positive. We just need to kind of get the stuff in place to deal with the bad side so we can all focus on this positive stuff more, I guess.
Yeah, I think as this is becoming clearer from a creative perspective, the question is not, it feels more like a parallel to, let's say, when GarageBand was first bundled with Max, which is, well, I don't know, 15 years ago or whatever. And, you know, has that and all the sample packs that came with that that have then subsequently been used on massive hits, has anyone lost out because Umbrella by Rihanna used the, like, literally the stock, like the number one stock beat in GarageBand and just slowed it down a bit? Has anyone lost out because of that? Or has it just actually liberated creativity and it's brought a lot of people with it and human beings doing other things? It really, you know, it feels like it's becoming part of the creative process. And yes, like you say, if you're a human being making very human music, that's still what people want. In fact, if there's one thing that people crave more than ever in 2023, it's authentic human connection and authentic human stuff, right?
The more things that AIs do, the more we're going to want to connect with humans. But interesting. So the other thing, the last thing I'll say from the IRIS Academy Summit I went to was that there was a really strong thread there of composers and songwriters who were talking. And they were really like, I don't need help composing music. They were really like, that's what I enjoy about my job. I love writing music. That's why I'm a songwriter. I don't need help with that. I don't want to. What I do need is all the stuff that's the admin around it and the boring tasks that stop me from having more time. And Tom Gray, the songwriter and campaigner, was there. And he was talking about how when he's been trying to write for a brief late at night and the deadline's the next morning, the amount of times he's put an automated drum beat on it to finish it off. And there was a big laugh in the room of recognition. Like, there are things that you like doing that are your human skills. And there is stuff around that these things can help you with. And I think that's where, again, there are people who are excited about this because they don't see the threat. They see it as something that can free them up to spend more time composing music rather than being threat. So I think it's all, I think all of it is just so fascinating. And we're still in the early stages of discussing what it all means. And that's why I think it's just so important for everyone to be reading about this stuff and playing with these models and understanding what they can do for better or worse. You know, I think like the more everyone leans into it, the more you know if you want to use it, and the more you kind of, the less threatened you feel, and the more kind of you understand what you want to do, what you need to do next to kind of navigate this whole world. So I think that's where we're at. And the good thing is there was a conference for songwriters talking about AI, and there are, you know, everyone is talking about it in the industry now. It's not this weird sort of niche subject anymore. So I think we're going to find our way through this to the kind of the right path forward where it's an enabler, it's not kind of a threat.
It does feel like we have a chance to reach that beautiful future where we are able to become the creative beings that we want, and it's the assistant that we need to get there. Whether that pans out or not is another question, but it feels like we can take those steps down that road. And like you said there about reading about it and testing it out, I will put links below the podcast to the vast archive of news that you've written on musicali.com about AI, and people can sort of wade through that and pick out some of the best stories themselves. And I'll put a couple of links to some of these technologies we've mentioned. People can play with them and see if they can come up with a better Schlager bro step hybrid than I did.
I think it's going to be wonderful. I'd say that. So no, I think this is really the message of all of this, is that you should read lots of Musical.ly articles, obviously. But I think just this is cutting edge, rapidly developing technology that can make you feel unsettled. But at the same time, it's not so different from other tools we've had in terms of its potential impact. And it's really, when you look at it as how can this fit into my creative process, it's not such an alien thing. It's more a tool, and you can either use it or not as you prefer. I think that's where we're going to get to with it. And then we'll let the regulatory side will sit alongside that. And that's hopefully going to kind of, we're going to see some movement on that.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of summing it up. And so on that note, that AI-composed note, Stu, thanks for joining us as ever. And I urge everyone to read your writing about a musical AI to get a better grip of it. Thanks, Stu. And there we are. So enormous thank you again to my colleague and head of insight, Stuart Dredge, for sharing all that great insight. I will put a link below the podcast to all of Musical.ly's reporting on artificial intelligence and music. There's a lot there for you to dig into, as well as links to other things that we mentioned in the podcast. If you did find the podcast useful, please share it on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. And if you want to get in touch with me, of course, as ever, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me on joe@musically.com. That's Joe, J-O-E. @musically.com. Now, don't forget, we have another way of staying in touch. It's a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which lands in your inbox with a graceful swallow dive every Friday. And it rounds up all the best bits of analysis, news, marketing insight, and skills from across Musical.ly's range of services. There's a sign-up link below the email. And if you're the kind of person who prefers doing everything through LinkedIn, well, you can find us on there as well, and you'll get one every Wednesday. So that's it. Thanks for listening. I've been Joe Sparrow, Musical.ly's editor. You have been you. And until next time, farewell.